Pleasure to be here this morning, and some of the information I'm going to be presenting here is unpublished and probably about 7 years old, but it's relevant to our strawberry production right now. In California, we have a number of strawberry production areas. Strawberries are primarily produced along the coastal areas, and we have a little bit of production in the Central Valley. So most of the production is in this Watsonville Salinas area. The second greatest area is around Oxnard. About 20% of the production around Santa Maria, a little bit in Southern California, and a very little bit in the Central Valley. Strawberries in California are grown as an annual crop primarily, so probably over 99% of the strawberry acreage is replanted each year. It's about 35,000 acres of strawberries, and the value is almost $2 billion. The primary damage for western flower thrips is what we call bronzing. And secondarily, we can get a flower abortion from the feeding on the strawberry blossoms. Now, there's a threshold that we use in California, about 10 thrips per flower. This threshold was actually developed by Bill Allen, who was a professor at Berkeley, and it was developed in the 1950s. And so this is something that really needs to go back and be revisited, and I don't think it'll probably ever happen. Bronzing is very important on strawberries when it happens, but it only happens infrequently. But because of the value of the crop, strawberry grower can gross between $35,000 and $50,000 an acre. And when they do have strawberry damage, it's very significant. But again, it's sort of a secondary sort of problem for growers. And so it's not something that I've spent a lot of time on trying to develop thresholds. Now, as we started learning about bronzing, strawberry industry started getting they started looking at bronzing as being a very important problem in the late 1990s again, and actually sponsored some research on it, and that's what I'll be presenting here today. One of the things that we found out is that there's actually different types of bronzing. The bronzing that the industry was concerned about is what we call this type 3 bronzing, which is actually a discoloration of the whole surface of the fruit, and I'll show you some more dramatic photos in a little while. We also found that there was a bronzing that we call type 1 damage that's primarily bronzing around the calyx. You see a little bit of feeding on the underside. And then there's a type 2 bronzing that's bronzing at the tip of the fruit. And this we associate with phytotoxicity from chemicals. And here you can see this is after a sulfur application, and you can see the little sulfur puddled underneath the flowers. So what are some of the characteristics of type 1 bronzing? This is the one that we associate with thrips feeding. And so you can see that the thrips typically feed underneath the calyx. You can see some feeding again on the calyx and a little bit underneath it. Type 2 bronzing, this is the photograph again of sulfur injury. So when they usually apply very high volumes of spray, usually at a minimum 100 gallons and as much as 200 or 250 gallons. So when the pesticide starts dripping off, if it's something like sulfur that's phytotoxic, you could see this bronzing then at the tip of the fruit. Type 3 bronzing, though, is the most severe type, and this is what it looks like after the fruit. This is what you see initially when you start seeing the bronzing occurring, and then later on it progresses into this type of situation where it's unmarketable. One of the things that we started to notice as we looked at this is we started seeing shadows like this, where when there was a fruit against a fruit or a leaf against a fruit, we would see bronzing occur areas around that. And so we believed that this was probably due to some kind of a physiological cause that was associated with high temperatures. And there was some anecdotal information that I had when I started talking to growers early on. For example, some growers would say when we sprayed for things, a lot of times it didn't matter if it was an insecticide, but we'd still get control of the bronzing. Or they'd say that, you know, we had our truck parked out in the field and it had these stacks of boxes on the back, and in the shadow of the boxes we didn't get bronzing. So we started trying to look at these different possible causes for the bronzing. One of the things that was done very early on is we worked with one of the pomologists who looks at histology of fruit, And he looked at the bronzing that was occurring from this type 3 bronzing, and he said that it was characteristic, or it was consistent with sunscald injury that they would get with other types of fruit. So in the very first year that we started working on bronzing, you know, we went out in the field and we found a field that had high densities of thrips. It was a field that had a history of bronzing in previous years. And basically just set up a big spray trial where we sprayed it with lanate and malathion like the growers would do during the season at that point, and then had some untreated blocks. And basically, this is what we found. These were the number of thrips per flowers. This was our 10 thrips per flower, 10 thrips per flower threshold. And these are the sprayed plots. These were the unsprayed plots. And these were the proportion of bronze strawberry fruit. And basically, we had no difference between the treated and untreated blocks. But when we had, most of the production is in the coastal areas, so there's a lot of coastal fog. It's pretty cool. But then we end up in these periods where the fog doesn't come in, it gets warm, and there's a lot of solar radiation at higher temperatures. And then it's during those periods that typically we associate the higher levels of bronzing. Along with this, I was working with my co-authors on this study, Kirk Larson, who's a pomologist that works out of the South Coast Research and Extension Center at Irvine, and Steve Koike, who's a plant pathologist in the Cooperative Extension Office in Monterey County. And along with that, then, we set up an experiment in the same field where we had different colors of mulching, plastic mulching. So we used, in this, the first year, clear full bed mulches, which is what the typical university recommendation is. We used a yellow type of mulch, and we also used a clear center strip type of mulch. And this is where you plant the beds with the strawberries, and then after, right before the fruiting starts occurring in March, you put up a center strip of clear mulching, and that's what a number of the growers, particularly for Driscoll strawberries, do. And so then along with this, we looked at sprinkling, and we had overhead sprinkling in some of the blocks and not overhead sprinkling in other ones. And then we took fruit harvest between the middle of April and July. In that very first year, what we found is we did have a significant difference between the type of mulching that we had, with the clear full bed mulching having a little bit less bronze fruit than the other. Where we did the overhead, the sprinkling, in this case these are microjet sprinklers and not sprinkled, we also had a difference in bronzing. So we had more bronzing where it was not overhead sprinkled than where it was sprinkled. But the problem was, in terms of number of cull fruit, we also had more culls where we had this overhead sprinkling because of plant diseases that occurred with the higher humidity. So in the next year, we set up an experiment to try to factor out a little bit more about these causes of bronzing. And this was basically similar to the previous experiment I just mentioned, where we had different types of mulching. We also set up shade cloth hoops, and we set up plots with deficit irrigation. And then we had plots where we had commercial sprays. So these were all not sprayed plots. These were sprayed plots. We also ran these sprinklers then we had sprinkled plots and not sprinkled plots. So these are sprinkled, these are not sprinkled, and these are complete blocks. And we only ran the sprinklers for 15 minutes after each harvest. So they harvest twice a week, and we set up the sprinklers during each one of those. And this is what the plots looked like from overhead. You can see the different little blocks that we had in here, and the shade and not shaded. If you looked at from the ground here at the sprinkled plots, this was the type of sprinkling that we had going on within the blocks. And our strawberry fields are huge in California, so you can kind of get a feel for that. And when I say that the gross is 35 to 50,000 an acre, the cost of the production is anywhere from 15 to 20,000 an acre. So it's already a very high input situation. So the results of that particular experiment showed that there was a significant difference between treatments, and there was a particularly a significant influence difference between sprinkling treatments. But the primary thing that we looked at here, when we looked at sprinkled and not sprinkled, you can see the big differences here. We really didn't have a difference, though, where we put on the commercial chemicals and not and on-spray plots. Here we did have a significant difference where we didn't sprinkle between the commercial chemical and all of these other types of settings that or treatments that we were putting on. Along with that, then, we were interested in looking at the effects of the chemicals, because one of the things that we were wondering about is when the growers said that they could put on all these different types of chemicals and they still got control, we were wondering if there wasn't something in the chemicals that, like one of the carriers or adjuvant or inerts that was actually resulting in some of this control. So what we did is we set up an experiment here where we looked at lignans, which are one of the inerts that are used in a number of different types of pesticides, but not all types of pesticides. Sulfur, the commercial spray that we had, the grower that was growing these plots, we put on the sprays, exactly the same sprays that they put on within our plots. And then a few other types of treatments. And again, this one was done without the overhead sprinkling. It was done with a difference in furrow irrigation and just the typical drip irrigation that's used. So this was furrow irrigation plots, not furrow irrigation plots, and then all of those other treatments I just mentioned. So in the first year of this experiment, these were the number of thrips per flower. Where we had the commercial spray, we didn't have really great control of the thrips, but overall it was less than we had in the other treatments. Where we had the lignans, I'll point those out particularly. This is the lignan treatments, a little bit higher amounts of thrips. And this is where we had in sulfur. And we, in this case, we had a difference between treatments, but no difference between the furrow irrigation and non-furrow irrigated treatments. So then we could just look at those treatments as a factor. In that case, our untreated, these were the number of bronze fruit we had per plot. This was the number of bronze fruit with our commercial chemical treatments. And these were the number of bronze fruit where we just put on the lignin material. We had reduced bronzing where we did leaf removal, which was a surprise to us. But we also had a reduced level of bronzing where we put on thiolux sulfur. And what's interesting about this is after we did the experiment, we found out that thiolux also contains these lignans. Looking at the grower, this is actually the type of, typical for a lot of the growers in Watsonville. These are the number of treatments that were put on. So if you look at the pesticide sprays here, Agromec in a number of different organic products that were put on, Pyganic and Neem, a lanate application, dibrome application, and organophosphate, Agromec, lanate again. So during that brief period of time that we were working here, the grower had six different treatments that were put on. We put on our lignin sprays every 2 weeks during that same period. This is typically the period in May and into June that we have our bronzing. When we looked at the number of thrips per flower, we did have somewhat lower levels where these chemical controls were put on, but we had no difference in thrips between the lignans and untreated plots. These are the number of bronze fruits that we had per plot at each harvest. This is untreated, this is our lignan, and this is our commercial treatment. So we really had no difference then in bronzing between our commercial treatment and where we just put on the lignans. Now, what are lignans? Well, lignans are actually lignosulfonates, and these are a soluble derivative of lignin and a byproduct of the paper-making process. And our source for the lignans was a company called Westvaco that also produces a number of different types of paper products, and this is a byproduct of their production. And so they sell this, what they call Kraft lignin, into the ag chemical industry for use with sunlight-sensitive products. And recently, I think about 4 years ago, lignosulfonates became exempt from tolerance by US EPA. So now we can apply lignosulfonates by themselves in agricultural settings. And the specific projects of products I'm going to be talking about in a minute were these three products from Westvaco, and they're just different variations on lignosulfonates. So in 2002, then, we set up an experiment where we put on different types of lignans and then a combination of all the types of lignans. The Thiolux, sulfur, the commercial treatment, what the grower was doing in the adjacent field, and then we did this again with the leaf removal because we couldn't understand that previous experiment that we'd done. So then we went back, and during the late June, early July period, we had hot weather, and we started seeing this bronzing. And in this case, we looked at the number of not bronze fruit and the number of fruit with just the type 3 bronzing that was covering the whole fruit. And basically here, July 10th, we had significantly lower type 3 bronzing where we put on the lignans, even compared to the commercial treatments. July 17th, with all the lignan treatments, we had significantly less bronzing than we had the commercial treatments. These were the number of thrips per flower in each of those plots where we had the commercial treatments. That was the number of thrips. So basically we had no difference in thrips between any of the treatments in that particular year, and all of them were over our threshold of 10 per leaf. And again, that threshold is something that needs a lot of revisiting. So the bottom line for us in that case was the type 3 bronzing we really don't believe is caused by thrips. We believe that it could be that it was incidentally controlled by a number of the pesticides that the growers were applying. And what I've been encouraging is somebody to go out and be able to sell the lignans in a small enough amount for growers to use just during hot weather, so when hot weather is predicted, to put on the lignin treatments. And to my knowledge, there's no commercial product out there like that right now, but I think that it's something that has some promise for the strawberry growers. Now, in terms of insecticides on thrips, these are some of the, at that same period then, we looked at some of the pesticides that we had registered at the time, or success was not registered at that particular time on strawberries. It is now. We have very few pesticides registered on strawberries because its harvest is every 3 days, and so it has to have a very short harvest interval. It's a very sensitive crop because, not just due to phytotoxicity, but also because it increases the risk cup a lot for a lot of the pesticides because of the short harvest intervals and the fact that it's consumed by a lot by children. So these were some of the, and this was an experiment we did in 2003. Lanate was our typical control at that particular time. We had good, significant control with lanate at that point. We looked at Azadirect, which is neem oil, and success. We had good significance with success and with lanate. We repeated this several times with Western flower thrips again in Orange County. We still have significant control even in 2007 with lanate. We had good control with both the Entrust and the success formulations of Western flower thrips. And why this is important to us now is that lanate is no longer registered on strawberries. It's been voluntarily withdrawn, or the label's been voluntarily withdrawn from the company. So the only chemical that we have registered at this point was Entrust and success that we knew would control. So we repeated then a larger experiment in 2007 using a sale which has become recently registered on strawberries, Radiant, which we'll hear more about later today, and the spinosad, lanate, and agromec in this case. And you can see the only chemicals that really gave us significant control are lanate and the spinosins. And so this is really a dangerous situation for us. This is another one with some of the materials that we have in the IR4 process right now that we're trying to get registered for ligus control, clothianidin, novaluron, the pyrethroid, and none of these materials gave us significant control of thrips. So the dangerous part for us right now is that our growers use the spinosins a lot for worm control, or Lepidoptera control in strawberries. And so what we're trying to do is to get the growers to use other materials for the Lepidoptera control and then save these for the periods where we're going to have danger of the type 1 bronzing. And I think probably this threshold of 10 thrips per flower that Bill Allen developed was probably true for the type 1 bronzing, but it's probably not the case for the type 3 bronzing that we believe is caused by this physiological problem or the heat. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being here today.